Hey up, and welcome to the Strategy Sessions. My name is Andy Jarvis. I am the host of the show, and I'm here to tell you very quickly about the next 4 weeks. It's Women's History Month, and on the back of doing a similar thing in Black History Month in October, where I did a mini-series, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it again for Women's History Month. So over the next 3 weeks, I've got three guest interviews with three amazing women talking about various elements of marketing as they see it, from book promotions and finding your way in your career. I'm going to start off this week with Alaya Harris talking about all sorts. We met at Disneyland, speaking at a conference there, and just kind of discuss all sorts of elements of Alaya's career, from story brand to running her own consultancy to speaking at events and things, because she is just one of the greatest public speakers I have ever seen. Absolutely incredible. And it'll all be wrapped up by a good friend of mine, Catherine Mack, who's going to do the Dog Poo podcast at the end of March, wrapping up the three episodes that we have seen. So, right, without further ado, I'm going to shut up and we're just going to get on with the interview I did with Alaya back in January to launch Women's History Month mini-series. Don't forget, wherever you are, leave a 5-star rating, subscribe, like, share, all that sort of stuff. I feel awful saying that like podcasters do, but look, this is the game that we are in. Enough of me, over we go. Let's see what Alaya has to say. What one thing do you wish you'd have known 10 years ago?
There are many, many things I wish I had known 10 years ago. Ooh, girl, the journeys you have traveled. But if I knew one thing, it would be to trust in the core of my resilience. Mm-hmm. I have always had issues with anxieties and even panic attack. But if I knew how much I could move forward and be absolutely fine, I would hope that that knowledge would allow me to just let go, make less fear-based decisions, enjoy the journey a little bit more, knowing that I could handle it.
I had a guest on earlier this season called David Mannheim, who runs a tech company. And his answer was very similar to that. He'd been through a process of having a lot of panic attacks, a lot of stress, and a lot of anxieties. And I asked him the same question I'm going to ask you. Do you think you can learn to deal with that without having to learn to deal with it? Can you learn from listening and from practicing, or do you sometimes have to go through that dip to build the resilience that you have?
So resilience for me is a core belief and understanding, a deep knowing that no matter what, you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can get that from listening, no offense, to a podcast or reading a book. I have a podcast.
These podcasters,
I'm just saying.
These podcasters are terrible.
And they're horrible.
Awful.
Really. Can't stand them. But you have to go through something. Now, do you have to go through all the things? Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. But do you need to be able to at least touch on something to know a more guttural experience about the thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You maybe just have to see where hell is. You don't have to go in and have a season ticket to it.
Exactly. Yeah. But then the thing is, too, when you're in hell, keep going. You know, people are like, okay, I'm going through hell. I'm just going to sit here. I'm like, why? Just keep go. It doesn't even actually matter what direction you go. Just keep moving. Yeah. Because that's how you will actually get out of your own most likely self-created hell.
And I think talking as well helps, doesn't it? I'm a big fan of, well, I have a podcast, I talk all the time, but I realized when me and my wife went through an awful time is that you wouldn't have come out the other side if it wasn't for talking to mm-hmm. people and therapy and friends and, you know, just opening up and allowing yourself to say, I'm not feeling very good about this, mm-hmm. is a real strength, isn't it, to be able to move through that?
It's a huge strength. I mean, I had a baby, super cute, and I went through postpartum depression. When I did it, I was curious to see what was going to happen afterwards, and I'm hashtag a mood, but I'm also moody. So I was like, well, this could be a possibility. So I was watching myself, mm-hmm. and when I started seeing signs of it, I was called up my medical provider. And I was like, I need therapy. I was in 5 hours of therapy a week, talking it out. Because what happens with a lot of issues, you keep them to yourself and they just get worse. They're not going to get better. And they're not going to help anybody else, as I wag my finger at you. Like, you've done something wrong.
The British perspective on this is, I think Americans have always had a better relationship with therapy than Brits have. So, you know, you had TV shows about therapy and things like that. Now, in Britain, you only went to therapy if you were a little bit nuts. And the language wasn't great. Yeah, crazy. And, you know, whispered about in corners. And it's only in the last few years that I think we've kind of woken up to that. But to give you an example, you were going to therapy 5 hours a week. I was paying to go through therapy. Look, there's no easy way to say this. It's a sad story, but my wife and I lost a child.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So it's and a little tattoo there to remind us of Jude. But well, not dwell on that too much. I'm sorry. There's no way of saying that
No.
without being sad.
Oh.
But I got therapy through a charity, and we paid for it as well. I got an hour every 2 weeks. But that wasn't because that's all we could afford. That's all the time they could give us because their services were so in demand.
Wow.
An hour every 2 weeks, and you're there going, I had 5 hours a week. And I'm
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
I do
And
not
that
know where
was
you could
not
even
even
get
enough.
that.
I was like, can you just move in? Can you,
Yeah, it's like,
Dr.
come.
Schwartz, if you could just move on in, that'd be
We've got a
great.
bed lined up for you and everything. And just every time I open my eyes, you can come and talk to me.
Exactly.
So, I think we've got a long way to go in Britain, but I'm pleased we're on the right trajectory, and I think we're getting there.
One thing that I think that people hold themselves back from getting that help is that they are afraid of being vulnerable in private or in public. And then they're afraid of what happens to their identity if they admit this thing, and then who are they? I like to say my favorite quote currently is by me, personal quote, and it's secrets don't help anybody. Secrets don't help
Amen.
you.
Amen.
Secrets don't help anybody else. So if you are coming to whatever your shtick is in life, you're a business owner, you're working for somebody, whatever it is, for me, you're supposed to be coming from it to from a place of service to help others. The best way to help other people is to make sure that they are not feeling isolated and alone in whatever the struggle is. Connection helps. And you can't build those connections if you're living life and so busy keeping and tucking the secrets. So,
It's a Latin phrase translated to it. The truth will set you free. History, yeah, absolutely.
absolutely.
Brilliant. What a start. We should, at this point, 10 minutes in, probably tell everyone who you are.
Thank you. And I know that you're not lying because you actually sent me a WhatsApp that said, how am I supposed to follow that? You
You were
did
like my worst nightmare. Look, genuine. I go to a lot of conferences, right? I'm sure you do. And there are some great speakers out there. There are some good speakers out there. There are some great ones. And there are some people who are at the very top of their game. And you are in that category.
that means so much to me, especially because I do things a little differently than
You do.
folks do. I mean, we chanted on stage today and I was 2 steps away from just, Hare Krishna meditation over here, but that's okay.
But people come with you. I've been to a conference where somebody tried to get the audience to sing, and the only thing that happened is I wanted to eat my fist. I was just like, ah! And people did it, but it was awful. And I'm not a meditation sort of guy. I meditate by exercising. That's my meditation. Get out and walk. I was in with you.
You
I'm
were
in.
in
Yeah,
there. You did it. You chanted with
I
him.
chanted with it, and I came with it. The audience came with you, and they came with you because of the way you set it up. The it wasn't. You might be listening to this and going, she had people chanting. That sounds like the worst thing ever. Especially Brits, right? We don't do that sort of thing. Whatever. But it was a perfectly natural thing to do at that point in your presentation because of what you'd done beforehand, what you were talking about, and where you went next. It was natural and it was perfect, and I loved it. So yeah, I was with you.
I'm so glad. That means a lot to me, especially coming from you as an accomplished speaker and such a kind human being. By the way, it might sound like, dear listener, we've known each other for years and years. However, we met in person about, I don't know, maybe 5 hours ago.
And where are we?
This is the most magical place on
The
earth.
most magical place.
And look at this magic,
I mean, we
magic
don't have we
happening.
have this perfect Disney backdrop, right? But we can't go outside for whatever reasons. The health and safety police won't let us. But so
Just trust us, we're for real in
we
Florida.
are, yeah, definitely, definitely there. So you got into public speaking, and you do speak about marketing and storytelling, but you kind of merged that. You talked about the chanting and things with the overview on, is it wellness? Is that how you would call it? Or
So, which word will scare you less? So, the word that I was using was bioenergetic. So, if you were to ask me what exactly, it's terrifying. I know he's backing up in his chair. Oh my God, I've lost him. So, I was saying I'm a bioenergetic business coach or business consultant. And people were like, first of all, I don't know what that is. And what are you about to do to me? All bioenergetics is, it's a study, detection, and correction of your energy field, your mindset, how you operate in the world, right? When I do that with clients, they love it, but they usually come for something else. Whoa. They come for speaker coaching. They come for an email sequence. They come for, and they get a life shift. It's awesome. I love finishing consulting sessions with people, and they go, "Can I swear? You
Oh,
are
yeah, of
good."
course you can. Yeah.
Go, oh shit, I didn't expect that. I'm like, "Yeah, buddy."
I think the thing when you talk to successful people, and this isn't a podcast bro, we'll make you rich podcast, but when you
No.
talk to successful people, like Seth Godin, who was on a couple of episodes ago, said to me, he's like, I don't have more talent than you. I just have a craft and a dedication to writing. That's why I've written 20 bestsellers, and that's why I blog every day. It's not about skill in most cases, it's about mindset. And that's why I think when people can match the two, the mindset and the skill, that actually has a lot more power, doesn't it?
It has more power because the only thing in your way is you. We all of us, me
That's
included.
the clip for the promo, right? That is the clip.
Wink. When you are able to remove your limiting beliefs from the equation, that's when it starts to get good. Before then, it's the doubt and the fear and all of the I can'ts and who am I's that keep you from shining in the core of who you are in your most radically authentic self. For me, I also use all kinds of euphemisms. Radically authentic self is another way of saying your soul, your core, your essence of who you are that's unchangeable and perfect. So if you have this little ball of light within you and you're bouncing around with it, and then as life happens, you put trash on it, you cover it in mud, you beat it down, you try to break it up with a hammer, you do all this stuff to it. And then wonder why people, nobody sees my greatness. Well, honey child, you don't want who covered it up first. So you need to let it be seen. And that's what I help people do.
And I think that ties us back to the very first question as well, doesn't it? Because I think what you say, people look at you, and I get this question sometimes, and they say, oh, you were great at speaking today. Or they see me beforehand and like, you okay? I was like, no, I'm really, really nervous. And people have seen me a few times, they're like, well, why do you get nervous? And you're like, there's like 900 people in the room. They're going to be sitting looking at me for 45 minutes going, what's this idiot talking about? It's terrifying. But they think because they see you on stage, they go, oh, you're perfect. How do you know you don't have this problem? But to go back to where you started, you've been on that journey. You've seen it, haven't you? You've probably not always been an award-winning international keynote
No, I
speaker.
was not born this way. Yeah, no, unfortunately, they don't just give you that at the hospital, slap on your butt, call you a speaker. I wish my speaking rate, if that were the case, by now would be out of the
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's funny that you bring that up because, and I'm not trying to sound like a dick, but I don't get nervous. I'm going to tell you why and how I don't get nervous.
I'm
Because
here for this because I do.
it has nothing to do with me. The whole thing, no matter how fabulous, and I do look good. But no matter how fabulous I look on stage or the words coming out, people are there, and every person in that audience is a narcissist with a short attention span. And if I can solve their problem, I could be turning cartwheels on my head. They wouldn't care. It's all about being of service, which means you need to know who you're talking to, why you're talking to them, and what words to use to get them. It's not about me trying to prove to you that I have this huge vocabulary, this knowledge, and all this stuff. It's about me being like, what word do you understand? Because if I'm trying to be of most service to you right now, I just need to get in to you. And so I'm not nervous. Because I know that I know who I'm talking to. I
Yeah.
know that what I will say it can help. Yes, my hair is fabulous, and people are going to listen. Another reason why I'm not nervous is because is this. I always get the comment when I got off stage, I love your energy, right? And I brushed it off. I always brushed it off. There was one time when during my postpartum journey, I was crying in my hotel room, couldn't just. Postpartum is a, for me, what is an experience of just unbottomed sadness. And sometimes you're just like, oh my God, I'm so sad. There nothing has happened in this moment. I'm just so sad. I had to get on stage, get myself together. By the way, this is the video that's on my website. This is like in my speaking role because the video turned out great. I get on stage, I kill it, crush it. People walk up to me and they say, oh my God, I love your energy. It was in that moment when I also realized it had nothing to do with me. That energy is not mine.
I love it. So I get nervous beforehand, not when I'm on stage. But sorry, the first minute.
Yeah,
In
yeah, yeah,
fact,
yeah.
actually, it's 30 seconds before you go on. And I don't know why I get nervous because a lot of the time I do the same presentation. So it's worse when it's very new because you're trying to remember, do you remember all the content? So that's a little bit different. But
And your presentation was so good.
thank you very much. But there's so, like, oh, there was a problem with the AV today for me. I wanted Now and Next on the comfort monitor down the front. If you're listening to this and you don't do speaking, you're like, what are you on about? But you have a monitor that shows you usually what the next
Next
slide is, and
slide.
you've got the notes. But this one only showed you what was on the screen behind you. But the way I don't really present. I say I tell stories, which I know sounds incredibly wanky, but I there's a
I'm a
journey that
strategic storytelling consultant, so I think it's
you get it,
great.
right?
I
Thank you.
do.
Thank you. So I'm telling stories, but like, you can't hit a punchline if you've already flicked to the slide and given everybody
Yes.
the punchline.
Oh.
So Now and Next is really important for me. So I know to when to change and all. And it wasn't there. So that's carrying to my nerves. And then my hands are getting sweaty. I can feel my heart rate going up. And all these things are happening. But once I get on and I tell the first story, everything goes better from there. But that little bit about it's not from you. Although the other side of that is I use those nerves, they make me prepare. I know I'm going to get nervous, and if I know if I haven't prepared, those nerves are much worse.
Oh yeah,
So it forces me to prepare. So I don't mind the nerves so much, but I love that, it's like, it's not about you. Yeah, no one knew you were a disaster, I suppose, before you went up there,
Oh.
and then you still pushed it.
You fix your makeup, you adjust your girdle and you get up on stage.
You put your shoes on.
Yeah, but I mean, I love these. If they weren't so big, he'd be missing these fabulous shoes.
Oh, and as we're in America, I have to call them Puma,
What?
not
Oh no,
Puma.
Puma. That's
Puma.
just like Adidas.
Yeah. Puma. Sorry, if you're listening to this podcast, because most people do
Sorry.
listen, sorry, I am wearing some bright sneakers.
And they match my top. Like they match.
It's almost as if it was made,
It's
anyway.
yeah.
So, public speaking, you're amazing. Links in the
Thank you.
show notes. Get in touch with the layer. Have a look at Showreel. I hope you can afford a fee because you will not. Absolutely will not regret it. So that's number one ticked off the list, although I'm sure we'll circle back quickly. Tell us about your agency consultancy. How do you frame it?
It's a consultancy,
Consultancy, yeah.
but it really exists so that I can have more in-depth work because you can only do so much from the stage. And so when someone comes to me and they're like, well, come and speak now in my corporate, and then, well, now you're making me realize I have a big problem with my culture. Because the way that I look at stories is they are grand connectors. Everyone has their storyline. And you think of like a movie like Knives Out or something like that, like a big ensemble cast. Everyone has their own story, but they find ways to intersect them for the grander story. That's how workplace culture works, intentionally or unintentionally. People are intersecting stories to form something. But is it a story, that grander culture story, that actually is going to serve anybody? Or is it going to serve your strategic goals? I love it. People do this. They're like, I'm so smart. I'm going to get with my executive team. It's going to be like a whole leadership retreat and stuff. And we're going to do like 4 days and come up with our strategy. And they
Yeah,
didn't talk to anybody else besides who was in the room.
a little bit of me's just died when you
Yeah,
put
and I
that.
know, right? And it's sad. And then they go and they go back and they're like, well, the powers that be have now said, Here is the strategy. And their culture is totally misaligned. They're like, we're going to be the most innovative company ever. I was like, well, you literally just told me to stick with the script as my manager a week ago. I'm not going to innovate. Right? I'm going to get fired. So you have to understand what the stories are that you're telling and then weave them together. So when I do consulting work, it's a little bit of an assessment. So I'm married to a college professor,
okay.
right?
And you have my deepest sympathies.
He's a college director and a director of research, right? But he has like woven within me. He's like, no, let's get the data. Let's get the data. So that's what I do. I'm like, okay, let's talk to people. Mm-hmm. And you can't be in the room, Mr. Manpower, that be. We need to have a conversation around what's actually happening and the stories that are actually being told and how, if they match the story you want to be told and how we fill in that gap. And it usually is around building a collaborative narrative that fosters a culture that can actually help you get your strategic objectives.
Beautiful. Because I when I go into companies, I consult on marketing strategy. You go into companies and they're like, so here's our business strategy. And so I tend not to do business strategies, more marketing. And say, right, show me the business strategy. How did you come up with this? The senior leadership team went off site for 4 days and they came back with the tablets of stone from up the mountain and told everybody what to do. And you're like, okay, so when did you learn to predict the future?
Right.
And it's like, what do you mean? I said, well, all of this presupposes that, hey, your competition's not going to get bought by that massive American company and have a marketing budget 20 times yours, or that COVID's not going to happen or whatever. Oh, no, but this is our strategic plan. Innovation's always in there. And they're all,
always.
I mean, every strategic plan that's ever been created has got something about innovation, sustainability, great team culture. It's bullshit.
All of it is.
All of it's bullshit.
If on your wall in mm-hmm. your big office building, you have those posters with the lion that says like perseverance, I automatically know.
GTFO. That's all it's
I'm going to have to double my fee for this one.
It's so when I work with companies as well, and they're like, so it's like, what's your mission statement? And the moment it's got all your values. Mm-hmm. So mission statement, mission, vision, and values. And so the one word I can't accept in a mission or a vision is quality. I'm like, we okay? It's like high quality. It's like, well,
wait a minute.
Let me just stop you there.
What does that even mean?
Yeah. What does it mean? And what's the opposite of that? What, you're just going to pervade a lot of shit? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we don't pump out shit. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And that's like, that's table stakes, right? Mm-hmm. You just got to get. And then my other one, when you get into values, is honesty. Like, if you've got to write that down, you
we have
already
around
lost.
Your problem.
Yeah. It's like, you've lost already. Me and my marketing strategy, this is a microphone. It is not a magic wand. I can't solve your problems like that, right? It's like, we would do marketing strategy based out of facts. We don't do magic. No. My magic wand broke. I'm not Harry Potter. I'm not.
No.
Yeah, I cannot do that.
Can't fix it for you. I would love to.
So you go into places where there are often problems, and
yeah, often
it's about crafting the storytelling and the culture and things like, and doing those
exactly.
two together.
And we do it, I mean, in a little, there's a gamut because I'm very woo. So we can do it from storytelling sessions that we do together all the way to group meditation, visualization sessions.
Yeah.
It's a whole gamut.
Yeah. And depending on the company, you can kind of be somewhere in a different place along the line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. No, I like that.
Yeah.
And the story, I wrote a blog. Link in the show notes again. I don't know why I point down. For a guy called JP Castlin, who was a very early guest on the podcast. He's got a great strategy newsletter called Strategy and Praxis. And I wrote about storytelling. And I was trying to, I was like, I'd said I'd write about storytelling. And then all of a sudden you sit down to write it and you go, I'm going to write.
What do I know
about
storytelling?
The first thing I've got to do is tell a good story, right? So I started to think about it and I found an arc to look at it through. And the arc I picked was religion. Now, I was a churchgoer as a child, less so now with births, deaths, and marriages now. But I remember there was a guy called Alan Evans who was a great preacher, and he could paint pictures and he could have you sort of just delving into that. I mean, I think the line he used was like, I remember sitting there thinking, how big are the towers of Jericho? That's what I was like, wow, these things. And Alan was such a great storyteller. And if you think of what religion is, and this isn't belittling it, but you're being asked to believe in something, and the only thing you have is stories to make people believe.
Absolutely.
And the kind of the sign off at the end of the first section of what I wrote was, do you know what you never hear anybody using when they're a preacher? Percentages.
Data.
Yeah. And what is every single presentation you've ever heard about? We did the data and look at what we have to tell you.
Our brains don't work that way. Our brains work and process in stories. There's actually
so how do you square that circle? How do you square it?
I don't. I mean, data is important. So this is the way I look at it. Or I guess a question that I always filter it through. Why is my lived experience less important than your numbers?
Mm-hmm.
So if I can tell you a story about something that I've overcome, that other people have overcome, we've done focus groups, we've done primary wishes, we've all overcome this, and it's all qualitative.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that less valuable than quantitative? People find comfort in numbers because they can set it up and then manipulate them to their wills, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens with numbers. And then you can argue against it.
I'm a qual researcher. This is music to my ears. Keep going.
Right. You can then, well, let me fight you on this. Not 80%, it's 60% because I asked the question a different way. Well, yeah, but you can't fight me on the story that I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would listen to the stories that illuminate, that add color, that add things that I can actually action to that data, then you're in a better place. Are you trying to gather this data from me so that you can just have a bunch of data? Are you trying to do something? I want to work with you if you actually want to do something as opposed to just collect a bunch of spreadsheets.
I had a data guy, Thierry, on doing Black History Month. Black History Month in England, different to here, it's in October.
Oh,
so I did a Black History Month mini-series.
I'm now celebrating both. Thank
there you
so
go.
Much.
Absolutely.
Do it. Both sides of the year.
Why do it only once, right? So Thierry's a data guy. And one of the things he said that he hates what data guys do is use it to be gatekeepers of things, but also he hates setting dashboards up because you see what happens in corporate culture. You set a dashboard up, people don't go in to look for data. They go in to look for the one data point which supports the view they've already formed.
Yeah.
And therefore that becomes an argument point, not a data point.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that with stories, can you? No, yeah. You need both. I call data black and white and qual color, the color
of
that
it.
Brings the picture to life. But you need both.
You need both. And then I ask you the question is, what is the truth? Is it found in the numbers? Is it found in the stories? What is the truth? Well, the truth, I'm reading a book right now that I am now rereading for the second time, called Ask and It Is Given by Esther Hicks and Jerry Hicks or Abraham Hicks, depending on who you want to attribute it to. And it talks about how the truth is really just something that a lot of people have believed in, and they've worn that trail and that communication and that story over and over and over again until it becomes the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's grand truths, like the earth is flat, right? How long was that the truth?
Most of civilization, if you take a long enough viewpoint.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That was the truth. Well, we found out something else. Well, now it's a different truth because now we're wearing that different pathway. So I'm not saying that there's not absolute truths, but when we pull up our dashboard and we pull up our numbers and we try to divorce them from the story that they're trying to tell and say that they are the truth, we're actually doing ourselves a grand disservice.
And I think, as I said, a qual researcher and a social scientist is my background. And I think this is the problem in that we live in a data-driven world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you analyze data in certain disciplines, maths, physics, for example, there is always a right answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter how many times you add two and two together, the answer is always four. That's a mathematics problem.
Mm-hmm.
People are not maths.
No.
So when people give me unalienable truths about human behavior, I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay, honey. Are you sure?
Are
about
you sure?
That? Now, you know, there mm-hmm. are, you know, things like shelter and protection, basic needs. But once you get beyond that, you know, it's like, why did you buy this drink? You didn't buy it. I know. Why did you buy that
I don't
drink?
Buy my drinks. They're given to me.
Service. Bring us another drink. Yeah, bring them in. But yeah, you know, why did people post-rationalize? The reason they tell you is not because, and sometimes, do you know what? They don't even know why they did the thing.
They don't even know.
So then people say, oh, wait, you know, our job is to sell more of product X. And then you hear all these facts given about it. And it's like, it's not a fact. It's an interpretation of what we think we might believe.
It's a very compelling fact that you want people to believe is true. Mm-hmm. Some people accept it to be the truth, but that doesn't mean that it is truth with the big T.
Yeah. And I'm not against percentages, but I have never been able to convince any senior leadership team, either when I was in-house, when I was in an agency, or now when I'm working with teams to present ideas and things to clients. I've never been able to convince a senior leadership team with a graph.
No.
And I have shown plenty, right? Yeah. And there was a client I worked with last year. I can't mention them because the thing we said that we were doing is still in development. So there was a new idea and we presented it to the board, and like 40 minutes of the presentation, and you could see they got where we were going, but they weren't really, it kind of, yeah, but there were, you know, you could see the list of objections was getting longer and longer. We got 40 minutes in, and then we got to kind of the pièce de résistance. We clicked the button and we had 3 1-minute clips from customers talking about the problem they have with the thing. Mm-hmm. Like the meeting was finished. The moment the third clip finished, they were like, brilliant, when can we start? That was it. Three minutes of customers saying, oh, this is the problem and this is the effect it has on me. This is the, and one woman's face, she kind of ran through the impact of the problem on her and her family. And it's really, I'll tell you, it's about cars. That's probably as much as I can tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you wouldn't think, it's a tin box with four wheels in the corners, right? And it costs a fortune to run. But when it stops working, and she had a disabled son who couldn't get to school, she had the mother who needed to go to hospital, and the pain on the woman's face was immense. Mm. And like 1 minute, close the deal. It was done.
It was the story.
It was the story.
It was the lead up. So the data and everything, I'm sure, added credibility. They could get a clear path forward. They understood you were legit.
Oh, no, I cocked up. I should have just put the stories at the top. Yeah. That's really, it was a lack of confidence. I should have just put the stories like, hey, listen, look at these three women. Are we done? We're done. Right, just sign up then.
Always just listen to the women.
I mean, there's a lot of sense in that. There is a lot of sense in that. On that, this is probably going to go out around International Women's Day. In fact, it is going to go out around International Women's
Day. We can say that now. It's a plan.
Yes, it's a plan. So always listen to women. But I always feel really weird asking questions like this as a guy, but as a woman who runs a business, tell me about the additional challenges that you face in your world, which is LA is your world. But do you work just in LA or do you work kind of all over the US?
Over.
Right. So tell me about the challenges of being a woman CEO, a female CEO.
That is another podcast episode in and of itself. The challenges of being a Black woman CEO, because I don't know how to extricate them from each other.
Yeah, I was running this morning and my knees suddenly decided it doesn't want to go that way. So I'm old.
I'm a former chef and I understand knee issues. So as a Black woman CEO, there's multiple ways to answer that question. But one of the ways that I realized recently is I actually don't know what the difficulties are because they are my lived experience. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. Until I go and I listen and like for some reason I'm able to hear a conversation or listen to a conversation where people are not talking to me or they don't know I'm theirs, and especially men, white men. And I'm like, that's all you had to do? They didn't question you for hours about your credibility, that you didn't have to send 5 million follow-up emails. You didn't have to be the absolute very best that you could be. You just kind of showed up there, huh? You don't even look like you combed your hair or washed your shirt. Well, you know, your hair challenge.
Shots fired.
But it is, that is a lot of it is when you have your own lived experience, you sometimes, and I sometimes don't even realize how stressed the fuck out I really am in comparison to everyone else, because it's just how I live. I mean, a lot of Black people grew up with the thought from their parents, you have to be twice as good to get half as much, et cetera, right? And as much as people would love that not to be the case, it's still very much the case. I have intentionally even aligned myself with companies run by white men to vouch for me into rooms that they will not hear me in. So
That's so sad.
It is sad, especially because I'm really good at what I do. It was interesting too, because it still doesn't matter on one level. There's another speaker at this conference that we're at right now, Black woman, fabulous speaker. Someone walked up to her, and I didn't see this, so I don't know. It was a man, I don't know what kind of man, and started talking to her about her presentation, except it wasn't hers, it was mine. This woman and I look nothing alike.
I mean, like, you look more like me than you
Yeah.
do this
I
woman.
actually even told her that. I said it would, and we our presentations were at least a little bit closer in content than mine was with hers.
Now, this has happened to me as well with Will Reynolds from Sia Interactive. Do you know Will at all?
I've seen his picture.
So, and Will's picture does not look like my picture, and it happened in Dublin, and I laughed it off because I don't know what else I'm supposed to
What are you
do.
supposed to do?
And but then you feel awkward going, is
The
him.
other, oh no, I don't feel awkward.
I wish I
It's,
was you.
I'm American.
Yeah, I suppose I apologized to her because I was British. I was like, I'm sorry. Rightfully sorry. I believe you've confused me with Will Reynolds.
I go, oh no, I'm so sorry. That's the other Black
I mean, you
woman.
confused me with a man from Philadelphia. This is the thing.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But so that's happened today.
Today.
Yeah.
Today. It is January 2024. So you asked me why is it difficult? Is because no matter, I have a unique-ish look. I'm tall. I got lots of hair. Big bright pink lipstick. I'm wearing a colorful shirt. I stand out, and I purposely stand out from a crowd. I mean, not in a crazy way. Like I'm still keeping it cute, but I still don't like. No matter what I do, people will still see me as other. And then they put you just in this grand big other bucket.
I spent a lot of my childhood. So I grew up in a place called Bradford, which you've probably never heard
I
of,
have
but
not. I'm so
or
sorry.
Bradford, as we've called it already. But and the part of Bradford I grew up in, there wasn't a huge amount of black people. Bradford's got quite a big Asian population, but the bit I lived in didn't. And I spent a lot of my youth wanting to blend in. So I'm mixed race. I have a black dad and a white mom, and kind of spent a lot of my youth just trying to blend in and almost be kind of disappearing in the background a little bit, or just be like everybody else. And it's only as I've got older, and we're back to the bright sneakers again. But I moved to Ireland 13 years ago, where there are even fewer black people than there are where I grew up, and I realized I was like, why are you trying to blend in, right? You stand out. So just dial that shit up.
Yeah,
So I was just like,
absolutely.
turn those knobs up to 11. And then I was like, but I think that's to go back to the question I asked you, is like, can you learn that? Or can you learn it from a book? I've read loads of books about standing out and being a thing, but until you have to go through it and you go, do you know what? Stuff this. I am just going to be me. And if
Yeah.
people don't like that, who cares?
Who cares? I don't. I think though, resilience and standing out are different because I have a course that I teach people how to be speakers, and the very first thing we talk about is not about, oh, you need to say this or do this slides. It's like, well, we get to that, but the very first part I go over is helping people excavate and tell their crisis stories, and you can do that really well. And then know what that means for who you are and how you can stand out. So when you want to stand out, you don't have to go, you don't have to, I mean, you can't be want to, you don't have to go through the same type of struggle. It doesn't have to be a learned experience. You have to have a experience of it within yourself, but you can do it, I think, with a little bit less pain.
And that's got to be a good thing as well.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm not here to like inflict pain on
No,
people.
no, no, no. That's again a different podcast. The After Dark podcast. No. But moving on, I'm not going to ask you what you change or what would fix to kind of make it better for women in business because it's not your problem. It's a man problem. It's not a woman
It's
problem.
not my
So, yeah.
problem.
So let's.
I'm literally, I am doing enough.
Yes.
In fact, I am doing more than enough.
Absolutely. So let's get back to again. I'm aware, like when I did the Black History Month series, I didn't just want to bring black people on and say, "Tell me about being black," and I'm not going to bring it on and say, "Tell me about being a woman." I want to know about
Absolutely.
your work as well. So, what's your sort of career background that took you to? You didn't again. You weren't just born a speaker, and you weren't just born a CEO. What were the
No.
kind of the key influences to get you to running your own business?
So this is my second foray into business ownership. I started off in the cosmetics and retail fashion business and hated it. I didn't understand why the jeans were $400. It cost $20 to make a major butt look flat. And what was I paying for? Luckily, I got laid off, so I don't have to worry about it that much longer. And I couldn't get a job doing anything, like anything. And so then my friend was over at my house and she said, "Well, your food's pretty good. You should go to culinary school." I said, "All right, bet." And so I did. I was in culinary school for 2 years and I got some wonderful advice in culinary school. A very grumpy chef instructor told me that I was going to have to work for $10 an hour for 10 years before I ever made anything of myself as a chef. And I said, "You clearly don't know me, haven't met me, and will never understand me." So I promptly started my first company then. It was a catering company called Culinary Princess Catering. I know, I know. And then it was a catering and private chef company. And I signed up, as one does, for an agent in LA. Everyone has an agent. And my very first client was Stevie Wonder. And so I was
Fuck off.
not.
I mean, the most LA story in the world.
I warned you. I was like tiptoeing into it with the Asian thing, right? And we traveled the world. I traveled the world as his chef and hung out in the entourage. And then I had other stars and
Not for
screen.
$10 an hour.
I've never worked for $10 an hour. I've never worked for $10 an hour. And it was that, but it was that moment that painted the stakes for me in the story. Like, oh wait, that's how bad this could get, $10 an hour. Oh no. And it
The
motivated
fork in the
me.
road.
Yeah, like, wait a minute. If I just keep like plugging on, this is what I should have, one, researched this a little bit better before I started y'all school. And two, what can I possibly do to make sure that doesn't happen to me? And so I did that for a while, but I was part of somebody else's empire. And I loved it. He's a very kind, wonderful man. I have beautiful stories of being in his presence. Then I was like, well, but what if I want people to know my name? Right? How does that work? So then I applied online and I got a job as a Google vendor partner working on their food team. So I was in the tech slash food space and I was on their marketing team. And so we talked about the future of food and we ran summits about food sustainability, and I got to work on global teams. And that was when I really started bringing in the concept of choice and how choice really affects purchase and how the stories we tell affect how we purchase and what we feel and how we interact with the world around us. And then I was sucked into my parent company to be the head of marketing for North America. And then I got laid off again. So I know. I promise I'm employable. Well, maybe not as much anymore, but like
I'm
people
not
like
anymore.
would
I'm
like,
totally
I
unemployed.
was good. I like knew what I was doing. There were real layoffs. I didn't get fired. But 2 weeks before they did that, they sent me to get a story brand certification. And then they laid me off 2 weeks
Oh,
after that.
Donald
Donald
Miller.
Miller. So being type A, I got my story brand certification. I now am an on-air personality for Donald Miller and Dr. J.J. Peterson.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And
I binged a lot of the content in COVID.
I know it intimately. And then I go also around on StoryBrand's behalf and I teach the framework to private companies.
Okay,
Yeah. So, and
right.
then I took Story and to other
And you still do that story brand as part of.
all
So,
of that.
half of the people listening will be like, oh my God, she does story brand. The other half will be like, oh my God, what is story brand? So, tell us, just give us kind of the, not the
Cliff
elevator
Notes.
pitch, but the elevator plus a little bit pitch of StoryBrand.
So StoryBrand is based on a book written by Donald Miller called Building a StoryBrand, and it takes a seven-part framework of story creation and applies it to marketing. If you've ever heard of Joseph Campbell and A Hero with a Thousand Faces, is the book that he wrote by going around and asking a bunch of questions and reading texts and realizing that human beings not only all tell stories in a similar pattern or similar flow, similar framework, we also live our lives that way. And that's how we understand our lives and how we understand problems and processes. So then Donald Miller and his brilliance took it, distilled it, applied it to marketing, and rode off into the sunset.
Not Steven Spielberg, where we're at Disney. George Lucas, get to the right one. Was a big fan. I don't think it was the guy that you just mentioned, not Donald Miller, the other guy.
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, it maybe it was
Probably
Joseph
someone else.
Campbell. No, I think he was. He big fan of his work and it influenced Star
No,
Wars.
Star Wars follows the hero's journey to a T. It is what
Yes.
people teach when they teach about story, about how to follow a
Follow that,
hero's
yeah.
journey.
And because Lucas was a big fan of, he looked at different cultures and realized that you can go to Hawaii and listen to their old stories, and you can go to India and listen to their old stories, and the names change.
But it's
What?
the same story.
No, sorry. Pretty
Same
much the
story.
same story. And kind of decided that you'd build something around the universal truths of, I've not been talking about people don't change. It's the same thing. It's good, it's evil, it's hate, all that sort of stuff.
And he seemed like he had some minor success with that, yeah.
I mean, I don't know that it's going to go anywhere.
Anyway.
This Star Wars thing, I'm not sure. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's got mass appeal, though.
Okay, fine. I won't put too much credence in
No,
stories
no, no,
then.
no. So, story brand, you're part of them and an on-air personality. What does that mean? You
Well,
can
I mean,
part you.
on air, like, so then live stream, I would
Yeah.
teach their live stream when they go and they educate companies buy seats or come
Yeah.
to
Oh,
be to
cool.
learn the framework and to implement it. And then inside of Business Made Simple University, I'm a co-host.
There you go. This all makes perfect sense. I would say the Business Made Simple. I watched a webinar. I started in COVID. I watched the webinar. I think it was Donald Miller who did the webinar. And basically, I hate webinars for the very simple reason that they are. Sorry. I hate webinars run by Americans because they're not going to tell you anything. They're just going to sell you a product.
Exactly.
Right. And
Yes.
they just say, it's like, let me tell you
Yeah,
how to
no.
fill your water bottle up. But first, I'm going to tell you this. And then it gets to you've been there 45 minutes
And
and they're
they
like, if
never
you just
tell you how
drop,
to fill.
3779, I'll then teach you how to fill a water bottle. And you just feel like you've got nothing for your time. And it drives me insane. Yes, Donald was selling throughout this and himself, but I actually made more notes about how to run a webinar than I did. I didn't buy the book in the end because it wasn't the thing I needed at the time. But it was an absolute masterclass in how to run a webinar. Like there was a certain, it was kind of, I think 10 to 12 minutes. And then he would stop and hook back and just repeat what he told you. And then he'd do it again. And then he'd repeat one and two. And then I was like, this is amazing. And he's got such a great delivery with it.
Absolutely.
And then the sales pitch came in a little bit and he just teased it. And then it came in again a bit harder. And then at the end, bang, it was dropped. And it had everything that all the tech bros do, but it just
But
had a
not
lot.
slimy.
We're not slimy, and I got a lot out of the webinar. I didn't buy the product, but I got a lot out of it. And do you know how many people have told about it since then,
Exactly.
even though I didn't buy it? And I think I know half a dozen people who bought it on the back of me saying, you should go and have a look at this.
And you should co-sign.
There you go. Can I
I
get commission for that?
mean, I have an affiliate link.
Excellent. We'll put an affiliate link
And
in the show notes.
I
Share it
mean,
around widely.
share it
That's it.
around.
That camera. There you
I
go.
mean, I guess I'm going to share with you.
Oh, cool. Excellent. So I didn't know that. So you got into story brand, you're doing that. And then so your business, what is your ideal client? It's a marketing podcast, right? So who do you want to come and work with?
Well, so the thing right now, so I have my baby. What I really would love to do is just go around and speak. So my ideal client is most likely a company that is trying to tell a different story, whether it's a company or an association, and they're struggling to clarify their message and to clarify one that is truly to who they are.
Do they have this problem at a certain time? And what I mean by that is, I often get brought in at two points. Either sales have started to go down, and it's like, oh, we need a new marketing strategy, or sales are going up nicely at 3% a year, but there's a new board or a new chairman or a new owner, and they go, that's 3% wonderful. We need 15%. So those two are the inflection points where my phone usually rings. Is there a point where people say, we need to clarify this story?
Usually when there's a leadership change,
Right.
because in
Regime change.
regime change, that's when the people at the top or top-ish have the ability to take a story and implement it. When sales are dropping, unless it's a big enough deal for someone at the top to take a huge notice of, it usually is not because of that.
Right.
Either a regime change, sometimes sales dropping, or something has happened.
A bad thing has
Bad, a
happened.
bad, a
Bad
bad
thing has
thing has
happened.
happened.
Yes. And so I suppose the bad thing is almost sort of crisis comes. And I know a guy who ran a crisis comms agency. I said, why do you do it? And his answer, He gave it in a very PR sort of way, but he was basically saying he can charge five times more for his hourly rate than a
Absolutely.
normal PR firm
But
can.
I don't do, I come in after your after that guy,
After that guy, yeah.
because it's like they're wise enough to realize how they got there. So they paid that guy five times as much, and then they're like, we should probably lay some groundwork
Yeah.
so we
He put the
don't.
fire
And
out, you're rebuilding the house.
exactly.
Okay. So do you sort of just flick through the LA Times or whatever the American equivalent is of the Financial Times and go, oh, new leadership at X company. Not X, because there's nobody
No,
working for those idiots.
no,
But
not
new
X.
leadership at Fiji Water. Oh, let me just fire a resume off to them. Is that
No.
basically your marketing funnel?
I
CEO sacked, send a CV.
funnel is just embarrassingly simple. It usually involves me receiving an email because people heard me speak. And that's why I'm like, yeah, just have Bruce come in and bring me to speak. Everything else will take care of itself after that.
And we're, so we're back to where we started, or not where we started, where we sort of started speaking. Invite Alea, just do it because you will not regret it. It is an experience, it's incredible. And I go to a lot of conferences, and I make some very good friends from conferences. And there's very few people I would say have dropped into that top bracket where I've just gone.
I hope all of you marketing leads, as well as any corporate event planners, are currently listening to this endorsement. Thank you very much.
But don't just buy her. I mean, I've got to make a
He was
living
also
too.
a good
I
speaker.
gotta make a living too. I got children to feed. I got things to do. I need a new car.
There we go. There we
So
go.
yeah, no. So speaking's part of the funnel. That's what fires
Speaking's
it.
part of the funnel. And then also, I have a program, Spark the Stage, where I go and I bring people in that are wanting to be speakers. And believe it or not, they're like, well, I'm not ready for this thing at my company, but I'll send you.
Senseless.
And then I'll do consulting from them through that. But I actually, I don't want to sound like, eh, I'm so busy and this is, but I will take, I mean, if you want to work with me, like, let's talk. But I like filtering them through if you've seen me on stage or if you've come through my program, because there's a certain knowledge of what we're going to do together, what we're going to get, that when you get people off the street, it's a little bit like it's a different vibe. It's
So
a
yeah,
different vibe.
it kind of it qualifies as, I suppose, for being
Yeah.
brilliant. I love that, and I think so. You've got the LA West Coast. Which bit of LA do you live in? I'm going
Burbank.
to turn up Burbank.
No, you can turn up.
Hi,
Hi, come on
LA.
over. Media City. I actually live where the headquarters of Disney is. Yeah, this is full
Gotcha.
circle.
Excellent. So we're back to talking about Disney. So you live in LA, and is LA this kind of the British culture we know? There's this East Coast, West Coast thing. Is the West Coast different? That's obviously rap music, but business-wise and things like that. Is there a difference in like the business culture in LA compared to New York?
Totally,
And
yeah. There's going to be a difference in the business culture because there's a difference in the culture considerably. It's much more laid back, less. I mean, you have Wall Street in New York, which I feel like colors a lot of the perspective of the way people do business. It's like you have suits on one coast and weed and linen on the other.
Yeah, okay. So
So, I mean, not saying that everyone is like that. There's always a mix back and forth, but that was one of the things that I love about being in California is that I get to be able to work with other people. And I fly around and I work with people everywhere, but when I say I'm from California, they also kind of guess what they're going to get.
gotcha.
Like, they probably know I'm not going to show up in a three-piece suit.
Life's much better for it. Fantastic. So last question then.
And you can ask me as many questions as you want.
Okay. Well, I might keep going. I only ask because you've talked about your daughter before as well. So you became a mum
November 7th, 2022.
November 7th, 2022. And life-changing experience?
No.
Somewhat.
Incredibly life-changing. So let's back up before November 7th. I was the cutest pregnant lady. I had no problems at all. I was the kind of person, like, I have big hair now. It like was double the size. It was gorgeous, glowing. I was like, had a little bump. I only gained 16 pounds my whole pregnancy, right? A dream. Then labor hit, and from that point on, it's been a shit show. Was in 36 hours of labor that ended in a C-section, and then I had the baby blues, or so I thought, that gave me a debilitating mental illness, is what the way I experienced my postpartum journey, right? Couldn't show up, couldn't speak the way I wanted, couldn't hold thoughts together, like connecting two thoughts and trying to link them was a challenge. And I thought something was, I wasn't sure if it was permanent or if it was temporary, or if I was ever going to recover. And so then on top of this baseline mental illness, there was this grieving period that also began to happen. Because, well, who was I? And I actually posted a post in about this summer last year, or summer 2022. And I had to like edit it at the top because it was just a picture of me like in like grayed out a little bit with like my birth date to my daughter's birth date. So it looked like I had died. People started calling my husband. It was a so I had to add an asterisk that said, I'm okay.
Famously, I'm not dead.
I'm not dead. Already had one death hoax. So that means that I'm going places with my life. But it was a post about the rebirth experience and mourning who died and realizing that the woman that died, I was so mean to her. I didn't even appreciate her that much, and she died. And how dare I even, I almost felt like, how dare I even mourn her, because I wasn't very nice to her to begin with.
I have a lot of mental turmoil about asking you that last question. And the reason I asked you that, I worry about asking you the question, is very rarely do I have men on the podcast and ask them about having children. It comes up more frequently when I have women on the podcast who often bring up that they have children. So then I ask them questions. So it's not that I'm sitting here going, oh, I must ask a woman a question about being pregnant or having a kid. But I'm aware that it's not a question I ask men. But then again, I don't really ask it. It's only if it comes up in conversation. Yeah. Women tend to bring it up more than men do. Yeah. Anyway, so going back, the reason I'm telling you that, just because I'm like, should I have asked that question? But you've talked
it's
about
okay.
Your daughter, and that's...
We want to talk about Women History Month. Yeah. Being a female business owner and a mom at the same time is just another reason why women are super strong as humans.
Yeah. And there's a woman called Charisse Anibaba, who was on. She, head of marketing, worked for McDonald's UK and things like that. And it was one of my favorite podcasts I've done, not because of anything I did. She was just incredible. And like everything she said was music to my ears. Now she works in the corporate machine, doesn't work for herself as you do. But what really blew my mind, as an open-minded man, I would think, I think I'm a fairly progressive chap.
Okay.
But she talked about how she was worried that her career was over because she wouldn't be able to stay late. She wouldn't be able to be part of some of the things. She was going to take 9 months off. We get proper maternity leave back in the UK,
I'm
by
like
the way.
9 months.
Yeah, that's kind of your legal minimum. You can take a year if you want. But so, yeah, you got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, so she was genuinely worried that her career was over. And she's one of the most amazing marketers I've had on the podcast. And you think, if someone that good gets pregnant and one of their first thoughts is, shit, my career's over, how have we fucked the world up so much? How have we ruined business so much that we have amazing, talented women who worry so much about it? And did you run your own company? So maybe, is it slightly different, or do you have all those same, did you have all those same concerns?
Very similar. And I would actually say that I don't think we've ruined business that much. I think it's a little bit almost sadder than that. We've ruined our culture that much.
So, just to be clear, you haven't. We have. It's the boys who've done it.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
It's not the women who've done
well,
it. It's the men who've done
participated.
It.
So that's the only reason why women aren't ruling the world. You can be as negative to me as you want to be. But if all of the women that I knew banded with me and stood against you, you would be powerless. The problem is not only the men. The problem is the women who allow it. So when we have been growing up in an indoctrinated state, most women, me included, are not even fully aware of the talking about truths that we have accepted that actually are robbing us of our power.
Is that a woman problem. I know you're saying the women who accept it, but when you look and you dig into the patriarchal structures that we've developed from an early age of that, and I sense it's changing slightly, but when I grew up in the 80s, you know, even just watching cartoons on TV, you were very much reminded that, hey, you're a girl, you can be a nurse, you're a boy, you can be a doctor. So it's not just the overt stuff, it's the underhand stuff as well. And when you have a whole lifetime, there's a famous experiment with fleas, and I'm not comparing women to fleas here.
I'm like, but, this is going down.
Yeah, no, geez, this is, so how did you get cancelled, Andy? Funnily enough. But this is if you put fleas in a jar and you cover the jar, the fleas will spend the first 10 minutes jumping up trying to get out of the jar. And when they stop, you can take the top off the jar and they will never, ever jump out of it, ever.
He did just compare women to fleas.
I just give me a chance to save myself here. Give me a chance to save myself. The point I'm making, it's a metaphor, not a comparison, but the point I'm making is that when you spend your whole life from the moment you can interact with the world, so from being a toddler effectively, when you spend your whole life being told that this is how it is and this is what you've got, is it really your fault that you don't see that it can and should be different? Or is it the fault of the system that's made you look that way and think that way?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think that it's that simple. I do understand the flea not comparison analogy.
Thank you.
Metaphor.
Thank you for being so sweet about that.
There you go. But I just like to use
it. So as this is the last podcast I'll ever record, and Sorry. Let you finish. Please save me, Leia. Please save me.
I do understand what you're saying, but by that same vein, Black people in the U.S. should all still be slaves, right?
I mean, you've got me there. Right? I have no comebacks to that. You are 100% right.
So, but so I'm not saying that the burden is all on one side or the other, but as a woman, how can I sit here and say, I want to stand strong, be a partner, I'm not a victim, and then out of the other side of my mouth say, you did this to me, and take no responsibility for my current state?
Well, yeah, both things can be true, as you said. It's a bit of both.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and at the same time, I acknowledge that there is 100%, I'm sure somewhere, I don't even know what it looks like within me, because it probably is so ingrained in the way I sit, operate, dress, talk, the part of the debilitating patriarchal system. But I'm not calling for us to all rise up once and have this great conscious awakening. I mean, that'd be awesome. Like, if you are going to schedule that, let me know. I will be there. But send me a Google calendar invite. But I'm just calling for people to be aware of how they're living their own lives and make small changes. That's how any change happens.
Yeah.
Right? So I take accountability and responsibility for showing up. For me, that's actually a really big deal. I know it doesn't seem like it, but it is, because when I was dealing with postpartum depression, I couldn't show up. So me getting on a live, getting on a podcast, restarting my own podcast felt like Herculean efforts. So I'm not saying what it should look like for every single woman to stand in her own power. It could be as small as closing the door when you pee, because you're taking 5 minutes to tell your partner that you deserve to pee alone, right? It could be small like that, and it could feel huge. It's just about taking the responsibility for yourself in the moment, because you can't control what your grandmother did. But you can control what you do.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm what I like about podcasting is, firstly, discussing interesting things with interesting people, but the challenge it throws at you about how you think, because that's challenged how I see this problem. You know, it's a man problem. It's not a woman problem. It's a man problem. You know, there's a system that's created that benefits us and doesn't benefit you.
That is true.
Yeah. But you know, you've shone a light on it in a different way that's now going to have me thinking about it for days to come. Going, okay, what about this? And it challenges that, and that's what that's why I do this. Don't do it for the, you know, the downloads and the listeners and they're nice, they're lovely, they stroke your ego, it's fantastic.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah, absolutely, smash that like button.
but it's interesting too. So if we actually think about this flea comparison. Let's say you were able to...
Not comparison.
Yes, sorry, metaphor. Yes, not comparison. And you were able to isolate one flea. And you told that flea after you've suppressed them, jump, flea, jump. What? What's jumping? I haven't jumped. Okay, you're going to show me what to jump. Okay, I'm going to start jumping. And one flea starts jumping, and then the other fleas start jumping, and then the other fleas start jumping, right? What you actually don't do as a disservice to the flea is turn the jar upside down. Because then all the fleas just fall out to their deaths. They're not able to, like we were saying, walk through the process of flexing those muscles again to be able to jump and jump their way out. We have to participate in our own healing.
I never thought we were going to go deep on fleas today,
Meaning
which is
you
one of the,
started
this is why I don't script it. Some people who come on the podcast say, "Will you send me the questions?" I was like, I have no idea what the questions are going to, I know what the first question is going to be. I know what the last question is going to be. Everything else.
And that's beautiful.
Your podcast, what is it? How do people find it? Tell us about that.
My podcast is called the Flourishing Entrepreneur Podcast. It's about using tried and true marketing and storytelling techniques to help people tell radically authentic stories.
You've practiced that before, haven't
Yes,
you?
I have.
And I am here for it. I love it. And is what for, is it guest format? Is it
It's a little bit of both.
bit of
It's
a
really whatever the hell I want it to
yeah,
be.
yeah, yeah.
So
Okay.
I do have guests on there, and I love talking to guests, but I also have episodes.
Oh,
Did you want to be a guest?
I mean, look, if you're asking, I'm to be no, sorry, obviously.
I would love to have you
Yeah,
as a
you'd only saying that
guest.
now. She'd be like, I'm
I
never
mean, well, no,
getting in
it's
touch with
recorded. I mean, I have to stick with it. No, but really, I would love to have you as a guest. But I also have episodes that are just guided meditations. I have episodes that are live coaching between me and a coaching client. I have episodes that where I actually record a version of my speaking topic and call it stage to stream. So my content's out in the world.
Amazing. Aaliyah Harris, thank you so much for your time. That is genuinely amazing. This is why it's much more fun doing it in person. You just
Yes.
get the fun. It was amazing. Thank
So
you very
much
much.
fun.